Tuesday, the 19th of August, 1913. Attorney swears that witness was held illegally. Witness swears Dorsey refused to free Manola, fearing city detectives. The Atlanta Journal, Tuesday, the 19th of August, 1913. Attorney George Gordon, summoned by the state, identified affidavit as having been assented to by Cook at Frank's home, but says solicitor Dorsey was informed at the time that Negress was being illegally held. Boy says Frank talked to Mary Fagan, but could not describe the little girl. Daisy Hopkins' character impeached, but court refuses to hear indirect testimony against Frank's character witnesses introduced to bolster up Dalton's character. Physicians will support Dr. Harris attorney George Gordon, who was counsel for Manola McKnight, the Negro cook at the Frank Seelig home, when she was taken in custody several weeks ago by city detectives and held until she had given an impersonating affidavit against Leo M. Frank, was one of the state's witnesses in the Frank trial at the Tuesday morning session, and his testimony proved rather embarrassing to Solicitor Dorsey. Attorney Gordon swore that his client, the Negress, had been held at police headquarters for several hours illegally against her will, and that when he protested to the solicitor, the latter had declared that he hesitated to order her release for fear he would get in bed with the detectives. The witness declared the detectives would not allow him in the room while they were obtaining the affidavit from his client, and that both the detectives and Chief Beavers had informed him the woman was being held up on orders from the solicitor. Replying to Solicitor Dorsey's question if the Negress had not been released after she had made her affidavit, Attorney Gordon said yes, but not until he had appeared with a habeas corpus proceeding for her to sign. While cross-examining the witness Attorney Rosser, for the defense, obtained from Solicitor Dorsey an affidavit which the McKnight woman had signed in the solicitor's office before she was taken to police headquarters. The witness declared he had never seen this affidavit before. Shortly after the Negro cook gave her affidavit to the detectives, Mrs. Leo M. Frank, wife of the defendant, gave out a statement to the newspapers in which she attacked Solicitor Dorsey and the city detectives, charging them with having tortured and coerced her cook into giving statements damaging to her husband. It is understood that at the afternoon session, Solicitor Dorsey will put up witnesses in an effort to prove that the McKnight woman gave her affidavit voluntarily and without coercion, and that he will follow them with physicians to sustain the evidence given by Dr. H.F. Harris, Secretary of the State Board of Health, who made a post-mortem examination of Mary Fagan's body, and whose testimony has been characterized by physicians put up by the defense as wild guesses. Mild sensation is sprung. Somewhat of a sensation was sprung in the trial just before noon when one of the state's rebuttal witnesses, Willie Turner, 16-year-old son of a Sandy Springs farmer and a former pencil factory employee, swore that in March of the present year, just about a month before the murder of Mary Fagan, he had seen Frank talking to the girl in the metal room, and that the girl was urging Frank to leave her alone so that she could go on with her work. According to Turner, Mary Fagan backed several feet away from Frank, who sought to resume her by admonishing her that he was the superintendent of the factory. Attorneys for the defense objected to the Turner boy's testimony, which Attorney Arnold characterized as 11th-hour evidence dragged in here for the purpose of prejudicing the minds of the jurors against this defendant. The jury was sent out while the lawyers argued the point. The solicitor Dorsey and Attorney Hooper insisted that Frank had sworn that he did not know Mary Fagan, and that the testimony of the witness tended to show that he not only knew her, but that he pushed his attentions upon her. "The girl was killed on the second floor," said Solicitor Dorsey, "and this witness's testimony hinges upon what may have been the first step which finally culminated in her death." After considerable argument, Judge Roan admitted the testimony and the jury was recalled. The witness related his story to the jury and was given a vigorous cross-examination by Attorney Rosser, who caused him to admit that he could not describe Mary Fagan, that he did not know her personally, and that he did not know any of the other pencil factory girls. Judge's ruling discouraging to state. When Judge Roan during the morning ruled that for the purpose of laying the foundation for the impeachment of Mrs. Daisy Hopkins, one of the witnesses for the defense, the state could show by Mrs. Hopkins that she visited the pencil factory on a certain occasion, but could not develop from the witness her object in going there. Solicitor Dorsey intimated that the case of the state against Leo M. Frank had been vitally affected by this ruling. This was taken to mean that the solicitor was apprehensive concerning his ability to get before the jury the testimony of many of his rebuttal witnesses. When she was on the stand for the defense, Mrs. Hopkins swore she had never been guilty of any improper conduct in the factory, that she barely knew Frank, and that she had no knowledge of anything derogatory to his character. Mrs. Hopkins also branded as false the statement of C.B. Dalton that she had been with him to the factory basement for improper purposes. Upon her re-examination by the solicitor Tuesday morning, Mrs. Hopkins admitted that she was acquainted with Walter P. Merck of Atlanta and that she had met him at the corner of Alabama and Whitehall Streets one Saturday afternoon, but she denied an alleged conversation with Merck in which she is said to have related details of a disgusting incident which occurred at the pencil factory. While Mrs. Hopkins was on the stand, the defense announced that it rested its case. Immediately after the witness was excused, the state called a number of DeKalb County citizens who had known her for long terms of years, and each of those swore that her reputation for truth and veracity was bad. The state produced other witnesses who declared that they would believe Dalton on oath. Just before Solicitor Dorsey began his interrogation of Mrs. Hopkins, he announced that much of the evidence which was to follow would be embarrassing for ladies to listen to and suggested that the defendant's wife and mother leave the courtroom. After some hesitation, they adopted the suggestion. The state's attorneys make known their intention to call a number of prominent physicians to sustain the testimony of Dr. H.F. Harris, Secretary of the State Board of Health, and to rebut the testimony of a number of well-known physicians put up by the defense to attack the evidence given by Dr. Harris. Physicians whom the state will call are said to be Dr. George C. Mizell, Dr. J.D. Cromer, Dr. Frank S. Eskridge, Dr. John Funk, Dr. Clarence Johnson, a stomach specialist, and Dr. Samuel E. Benedict of Athens, President of the State Board of Health. When court convened Tuesday morning, attorneys Arnold rendered in evidence the time slips taken from the clock at the pencil factory and cited the testimony of Darley, wherein Darley had identified the slips. Solicitor Dorsey did not break his objection, and the time slips were admitted. Mrs. Emile Selig then was put on the stand for about 5 minutes to identify the brown suit of clothes work by Frank on Memorial Day. Wiley Roberts was the next witness. While waiting for Roberts to take the stand, Solicitor Dorsey made this statement to the court. When the time slips came to me, my information as that the detectives had written 826 seeing on one of the slips as a matter of identification. When I was asked for these slips by the attorneys for the defense, not desiring that they know anything, continued on page 8, column 1. Page 8. Attorney swears witness was held illegally by police. Continued from page 1. The identification, I myself erased the words taken out at 8:26. Roberts was announced as the last witness for the defense. He was expected to testify regarding Mrs. Lucille Frank calling at the Pail to see her husband. It was stated that the defense would close with testimony and that the state would begin then the introduction of its rebuttal evidence. Conley's custodian called. Roberts testified that he is the inner jailer of the Fulton County Tower.
Have you had the custody of Jim Conley for the last 3 weeks?
Asked Mr. Arnold, since he has been on the stand here.
Yes.
State whether or not he has asked you for any newspapers or magazines. Solicitor Dorsey objected. I think Conley should be present to deny this, said he. If they want to impeach a witness, they've got to lay a proper foundation. Judge Roan asked Attorney Arnold the purpose of the question. The witness said, Your Honor, that he could read but very little. We want to show that he has been asking for newspapers and magazines. I wasn't clear about our right to impeach him this way. Perhaps I may have to coil Conley back and ask him the questions later on. Turning to the witness, Mr. Arnold said,
That's all for the present, Mr. Roberts.
The jailer stepped from the stand.
Rosser goes out for medicine. Just previous to the moment when Roberts took the stand, Attorney Rosser had taken his hat and cost and left the court. After waiting a few moments, Judge Roan asked Attorney Arnold what the defense intended to do.
Just wait until Mr. Rosser comes back, replied Mr.
Arnold. He has stepped across the street to get some medicine, and I had rather he would be here when the defense announces closed. Judge Roan waited a few moments more, then told the state to proceed. State to call doctors. It has been learned that four of the following list of physicians will take the stand for the state to upload Dr. H.F. Harris, whose testimony had been attacked by the defense: Dr. George C. Mizell, Dr. Frank S. Eskridge, Dr. John Funk, Dr. Samuel E. Benedict of Athens, President of State Board of Health, Dr. Howard Williams of Macon, Vice President of the State Board of Health, Dr. Clarence Johnson, stomach specialist, and Dr. J.D. Cromer of Atlanta. Immediately after Judge Roan instructed the state to proceed, Mrs. Daisy Hopkins was called as the state's first witness.
You know nothing about the cot in the pencil factory basement.
No, I don't know anything about. Solicitor Dorsey directed her attention to the diagram of the pencil factory and pointed out the exact location where the cot was found. He asked her if she had never been down the stepladder into the basement. She denied any knowledge of the cot, the basement, and the stepladder, saying that all she knew was the stairway leading to the second floor. Solicitor Dorsey asked the witness if she was acquainted with J.R. Floyd of Redan Gah. After some hesitation, she replied that she knew him. The solicitor demanded if she had not had a conversation with him since the murder occurred, and she declared that she had not. Didn't you go to his house and get milk and talk to him after this murder committed? Solicitor Dorsey asked the witness if she was acquainted with Rob Goddard, Dr. R.S. Pound, Massachusetts Smith of the Nunnally McCree Company, M.J. Ballard, Walter P. Merck. The witness admitted knowing all these except Merck, and finally, when pressed by the solicitor, admitted that she knows him. Conversation with Merck. Do you remember meeting Merck at the corner of Alabama and Whitehall Streets one Sunday afternoon? I remember meeting him one Saturday evening up there on Peachtree Street. He asked you where you were going, didn't he? He asked me where I was staying, and I told him I was staying at Redan.
Didn't you tell him that you then were going to the pencil factory?
No, I told him I was staying at Redan.
Didn't you tell him that you then were going to the pencil factory?
No, I told him I was staying at Redan. Didn't he try to make an engagement to go with you to the pencil factory? To this question, Attorney Rosser, who had returned, objected. Mr. Rosser argued that the state might show a female witness's general reputation for virtue or immorality, but that he could not single out a particular alleged act and put it in evidence. Solicitor Dorsey declared that he expected to show by Merck that he met Diocese one Saturday afternoon, that she told him she was on the way to the pencil factory to meet her foreman, that she met him, but that she had made an engagement to meet Merck that night at her home on Walker Street, and that she did meet Merck. I imagine that this will bring up things which should be discussed in the presence of the jury, said Mr. Rosser. Judge Roan ordered the jury to leave. Ladies leave courtroom. Solicitor Dorsey, I want to show that this witness, Merck, not only met Daisy Hopkins that night, but that she told him where she had been and what she had done, and that she showed him the prints on her body and told him of an experience, and explained that she could not meet him that night. This woman has denied that she ever went to the factory for any improper purpose, and I should be given the privilege of impeaching her. Attorney Arnold, I knew when Your Honor refused to rule out certain parts of Conley's testimony and Dalton's testimony, it would so involve the case that we would lose track of the murder charge on trial. It has been so obscured now that it is hard to tell who is on trial and what for. We have confined ourselves strictly to combating the direct charges made by Conley and by Dalton. We were compelled to put this witness up for that reason. Frank is not responsible for all the misconduct that has been going on in Atlanta for the last 10 years, and we do not think the issue should be clouded with it. Judge Roan, it has come down to this, an effort to prove a crime that is irrelevant to the issue. I held that you can show that this woman did go to the factory in an effort to impeach her. Solicitor Dorsey, can't we show why she went there? Mr. Arnold, we have never tried to show that there was no improper conduct in the factory. We have asked all our witnesses specifically if they went there to meet Frank. Judge limits testimony. Judge Rowan, the state can show the witness did go to the factory, but it cannot show for what purpose. Call in jury. Solicitor Dorsey, as the jury was coming in. Your Honor, I intend to ask these questions and let Your Honor rule them out before the jury. Mr. Rosser, that is manifestly unfair. Judge Rowan. Yes, Mr. Dorsey, you cannot ask the questions. Solicitor Dorsey intimated by his manner of receiving the judge's ruling that he believed the state's case was affected vitality by it. Did you meet this man Merrick on Saturday afternoon after the National Pencil Factory had closed? Asked the solicitor.
I did not,
answered Mrs. Hopkins. And after that, didn't he go to see you at the junction of Walker and Peter Streets, where you lived? No. Didn't you tell him that afternoon you had been to the pencil factory? I did not. Come down, said the solicitor. Defense rests case. Solicitor Dorsey asked the court, I suppose the defense has finished. Mr. Arnold answered, Yes, we rest. The solicitor then called a number of witnesses to impeach Mrs. Daisy Hopkins. First rebuttal witness. Janer Floyd, a farmer of Redan, was the first witness in rebuttal for the state. After he had testified that he knew Daisy, Solicitor Dorsey asked, Do you know how many husbands she has? Attorney Rosser objected. I don't care if she has 200. Judge Roan asked the solicitor the purpose of his question. She said he had one. I want to prove she had more, said the solicitor. Judge Roan said, Well, did anybody ever have more than one husband? A ripple of laughter went through court. I think they have, in a certain sense, said the solicitor. Judge Roan ruled the question out, sustaining Mr. Rosser. The witness testified that he knew Mrs. Hopkins's character for truth and veracity, and that it is bad. He testified also that in conversation at his home in Redan when Mrs. Hopkins called to get some milk one day, Mrs. Hopkins had exhibited knowledge of the cot in the basement of the pencil factory. This, after the murder and after the existence of the cot, had been brought to light. Attacks Mrs. Hopkins's veracity. The following other witnesses, one at a time, testified that Daisy Hopkins's character is bad and that they would not believe her on oath. R.M. Goddard, a DeKalb County farmer who lives near Redan, who said he had known her 20 years. A.L. Goddard, of Stone Mountain, who had known her 10 or 12 years. A.L. Goddard, of Stone Mountain, who had known her 10 or 20 years. A.L. Goddard, of Stone Mountain, who had known her 10 or 12 years. Henry Carr, of Stone Mountain, who also had known her for 15 years. During the questioning of these witnesses, Solicitor Dorsey asked them all reputation of Mrs. Hopkins. When the last witness was on the stand, Attorney Rosser objected to the question in that form. Mr. Rosser said that the only way her character could be attacked was on truth and veracity, and he demanded that these words be employed by the solicitor in asking the character question. Although Judge Roan ruled with Solicitor Dorsey that it was not necessary, the prosecutor finally consented to word his question as desired by the defense. N.J. Dollard, who lives in Alabama, a second cousin of Daisy Hopkins, said that he would not believe her on oath. Attorney Rosser, cross-examining him briefly, shouting at him because the witness was hard of hearing, demanded, What kin are you? Second cousin, I think, said the witness. Did you come all the way from Alabama to testify that your second cousin is not of good character? No, I've been here some time. A forfeiture of a bond assessed against Daisy Hopkins in an Atlanta court was tendered by the solicitor, but was ruled out by Judge Rowan on objection by the defense. Len Smith was called. He is superintendent of the Nunnally McCree Company. He impeached Daisy Hopkins.